Blog Talk Radio.
I remember making excuses for what set me apart. And I remember wanting you to need me. I remember watching you lie when I had to believe. You and I were called something of a mystery.
Hello?
Hello? Hello. Oh, my gosh. All of that, and I just had my phone on mute. I open up the show. Oh, my gosh. That is absolutely awful. I'm like, for the past 9 minutes or 4 minutes, I've been going through my spiel and going through everything. And what I do is I come into the show about 15 minutes early, and I mute my mic or phone, rather. So that, you know, any background noise doesn't come and people have to listen to things going in the background who come in early. So I guess there's a whole list of about the show and the conservative conversation and doing my regular spiel I do in the beginning of the show, and no one heard it. Just silence for 4 minutes. Oh, my gosh, it's absolutely awful. I apologize for that, folks, deeply. And I won't go through all that spiel again. What I'll do is I will do the introduction after the interviews tonight. Because what I do is I introduce other shows who are part of the conservative conversation, or now the Patriots Journalist Network, and which I'll discuss other shows who are on it. But since we already have our special guests in tonight, I will leave them the floor. So welcome, and well, we first start off talking about what everyone's come to hear about, and that is your Never Again Ministries.
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Robert, for having my wife on. I would definitely appreciate it the second time around. Thanks.
You are welcome. And just to let you and the folks know is, and I sent you a link to the website, this show's website, and people, when they're nice enough to visit Bars Lodge Little Talk website, they also on the guest page or featured guest page, they will have a link to the show, so they, if they are unfortunately missed tonight, they can listen to the archive and get some information on your things you're going to talk about tonight. And they also will find a link to your website, which they can access from Bars Logic Political Talk. So, and that'll be up for about a week, so people can access it there as well.
Thank you. You
are welcome.
Thanks. Yeah, so Never Again Ministries was birthed in 2008 with my wife and I. Started out with my first book, If You Apply These Principles, God is More Practical Than We Think. Came out in 2008. It was something that doing marriage coaching, relationship coaching. We have a huge following for with singles desiring to be married. Have a big following in that area. So, of course, we do marriage enhancement and holistic relationships. We do marriage coaching, but we also have a heart for singles desiring to marry. We kind of like to have this saving your marriage before you get married. We like to prep singles in the process because I think there's a big, huge gap when people come to, when they want to get married, but they have no mediator in between. They kind of skip the whole premarital coaching, you know, and stuff like that. So we definitely have a heart for those because we want people to be whole when they, we want people to understand what they get into before they get married. So we're Never Again Ministries, that's what we do. We speak, we have speaking engagements. We have four books that's out right now, and we discussed my latest book on your last show, Wisdom, Preventing Problems Before They Happen. So we're definitely excited. We have our three or even better marriage retreat coming this October. We're excited about hosting it here in local Arizona.
Well, that's great. Now, is your wife on the line? I have opened up two mics, and I was hoping she could have came in the last time, but she couldn't. That's fine. I'm really glad that she's said she could come in tonight. So are you there?
Yes, I am. Here
right.
I am.
And am I pronouncing your name correctly?
It's Londina.
Londina, okay. Then I'm not mm-hmm. I didn't do a too bad job of it, I don't think. Thank you.
That's fine. Yeah.
And did you start the ministry together, or is this one person started and then you both got into it, or how did that develop?
Well, we did it together. Because it all began because we both had the passion for relationships and marriages. That's always been our passion for years, and God has put it on our heart to do those things. But we started it together, and it started off with his book, and then we began to put everything together for the vision we have for this ministry to go forth. I myself haven't written books, but I'm part of everything that goes on. We hosted a local radio show called the Dr. Love Show, which is something we did together, addressing different issues of relationships, marriages, and just a holistic person. And I've always been a part of everything that goes on, especially the ministry part and coaching people into their relationships and then also mentoring other young women in their singleness and also in their marriages.
So what do you bring up about, this is something I recall hearing from last time, is about helping out the single people. In what ways do you coach them?
Well, because a lot of times people go into marriage and they really don't understand what marriage is about. They have no clue. And because there's no, like, written handbook on when you get married, just like it isn't for parenting. You know, you don't know what to expect. But you just know that you're in love and you want to spend the rest of your life with this person. But once you get married, you see all these other things. And then, of course, here comes the D word. You know, everybody's talking about divorce. I don't want to. No. It comes with challenges. There are things you're going to go through. But the different problems and the different things you go through and you come through, it makes the relationship stronger because you come through it together. But too many people are so willing to give up on it. But I think if they come in knowing some of the things that are they're gonna approach, some of the things that are going to challenge them, and they prepare themselves for those things. And a lot of things you can prepare yourself in single when you're single, like, say, for instance, your credit. You know, you go into a relationship, you got all this credit and stuff, and you want to go ahead and go bankrupt and things like that. No. You want to clear those things up so that when you're married, it won't be a burden on your spouse. Different things, you know, like if helping your spouse, like supplying what your spouse needs, knowing what your spouse needs, because marriage is about building the other person. And a lot of people don't realize that they go into a marriage like, what you going to do for me? But it's really, what can I do for you? Because you're building each other up, and you're becoming one in togetherness. So learning that togetherness as one is really hard, especially for a single person. So learning those things and learning the things you can take care of your own self, because if you have issues yourself that need to be dealt with so you can be healthy when you get into a marriage relationship, because you have enough challenges once you get married. So you need to handle all the single challenges before you get in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead, Sean. I was opening up for her to, you know, take over your mic, and I'm not saying she did. It just I just wasn't thinking I was doing that.
Oh, no. Robert, my wife is awesome. Everything she touched in Never Again Ministry goes gold. She does an excellent job. Couldn't do it without her. I think that's one of the things that stand out about our ministry is that we work together as a team, especially with the coaching, because we don't coach anyone on our own. We're always together. We don't put ourselves in compromising situations. So I think that's one of the things that stand out with what we do, because it's rare that you have a married couple who operate in the same gifts and doing the same thing. Usually one does one thing and the other spouse does the other thing, and that's cool too. But for the most part, I think that's what helps kind of separate us a little bit in this area from most, is because we do it as a team. Whether if it's mentoring, if it's coaching, if it's a counseling session, anything of that nature, we always work together. So I think that's what helps us a lot.
Now, is there a certain training or any kind of degree or anything of that nature that or certification in order to be, you know, considered a marriage coach?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question. Now, like, my wife have her degree in social work, and she's currently working on her marriage coaching certification. I just got mine, so I'm definitely excited about that. So we always make sure that we get the proper training. We had countless years of counseling at our church with counseling married couples there. And then being able to just build a rapport with people and able to have a certain level of respect where people can entrust us. So we definitely have the certifications. Like I said, my wife is finishing hers now. And we want to make sure that we learn as much as we can, because we just don't want to go into this just blind. I mean, I know this is what we were called to do, but we also do our homework. We always make sure that we do as much as we can and when we're doing this, that we're not just shooting from the hip.
No, but marriage counseling, I mean, everyone who is or has been married is kind of has an idea, a natural idea of what that would entail. Could you give some more specifics on, you know, what topics would you consider discussing with, you know, a couple in which, you know, who thought that they needed marriage? Now, was this marriage counseling? She didn't mention before, but also I'm presuming marriage counseling if there's any kind of problems in the marriage. What would be some of the things that you would cover in that?
Yes, we a lot of times we have blended families. Blended families are huge. people wonder how, you know, we do a lot of coaching in that area with the blended families, because you have people who, she have a child, he has a child, they wonder how we come together as a family after marriage and deal with this, because we don't like playing, you know, mommy versus daddy, and they're trying to figure out how can we make this all work under one roof. That's big with today's society, considering we have a lot of single parenting in that area. And then we also talk about finances. Finances is a big thing. I mean, where would we be without money? Who controls the money?
Well, Sean London, if you don't mind me breaking it down, you know, on the first thing you mentioned about shared families, because you're right, that is something that is prolific out there, and that, you know, that happens. But what would you suggest in that matter? You know, you brought up the example of, you know, of, you know, maybe discipline, you know, or things of that nature, or the parents being, or the children kind of pitting the parents together, which I'm sure that happens in a lot of households. Not trying to get like free advice or anything like that, but what would you guys suggest in, you know, in situations such as that?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it has to, because we have a blended family, so we're speaking from experience over 10 years of having a blended family. A lot of times I tell married couples that the parents, both of you have to be on the same team. You have to be on the same page, because kids can play parents against each other in order to get their way, especially if mom have a son, it's easy for the son to go ask mom, can he have certain things, instead of maybe asking the father. So the married couple, they have to get together and set one set of order in the house, saying that the man is the lead of the house. He leads the house. So you go talk to your dad, and we don't use the word step either. A lot of times people, this is my stepson, this is my stepdaughter, mm-hmm. and what happens is separates the family.
So that's interesting.
After my son, I never call him my stepson. So people wonder, well, how old is he? How old is you? Because he's 23. So people wondering, okay, how did this happen? So I have to break it down to people afterwards, because I've never called him my stepson. Because when people do that, it automatically says, you're not really mine, but we're together. So I never call him my stepson. So, like, my wife and I, we have a daughter together. So I call her my daughter, and I call my son my son.
No, that's interesting. Well, I'm from a blended family. I brought my daughter into, you know, my wife. She didn't have any children coming into the marriage, and I had one. And yeah, it's interesting. Just the verbiage, you know, of, you know, stepson and stuff. That's something I've never even considered before. But yeah, I could see where that could be a separation, in which they think that, well, because someone's a step parent, so, you know, quote unquote, that they don't hold the same authority as what maybe a biological parent would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
Robert, I want to add to that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Oh, gosh, no, definitely.
Well, I wanted to say is that another thing, far as in the disciplining, it's important that the child knows that the other parent has their best interests at heart. And it comes with a balance of love and discipline. And sometimes when it starts off, you can't start off disciplining as, you know, the new parent. You can't start off disciplining, because that child doesn't really realize if you really care for them that way, if your love is genuine. So they have to feel those things. And sometimes, you know, the discipline has to be balanced. Like maybe the other parent, the biological parent has to give, you know, give the discipline while the other parent is working on the love part and proving their love and knowing that I'm here for you and I care for you. So once that's established, then that's when the discipline can start flowing for the both of them. And then that way the child can accept it a lot better. And statistics says that it takes about 5 years for the jail to really mold. when there's a blended family. So it, not necessarily, but it can. That's what the statistics say. But it takes some time in there, and that love has to be in there in order to balance with the discipline.
Now, he mentioned in your research, you mentioned whether there's a mom with a son, but what on the the reverse when you have a father with a daughter? Is there any do you experience or have you seen in your counseling experience where there's been like a battling between the the daughter and the I'm not saying this is happening in any particular person's case, but that's what I ask it is if like a battling between the stepmom and the daughter, is there like a natural resistance there or something or what? Because, that's my dad and now this this woman or this other female is coming into the the picture, so to speak. Is there anything behind that or?
Well, I really think what it is that, that there's always going to be that conflict because they're trying to figure out the roles. They're trying to figure out, okay, whose role is what. And when a spouse is there, a spouse and should be one with the other spouse. And then the daughter the daughter will want to be like, well, I was here first and that's my dad. But what it takes is sitting down and really coming together and explaining how the process goes, because the parents should be on one accord together and knowing that I'm not putting her over you. We are one family. But being a parent, you have to respect her because she is my wife. And her being my wife, you have to respect that relationship. You are always going to be my daughter, and you you're there, and I love you, and I love her too. But you have to really sit down and establish those roles. She is a parent, so we have to respect her as a parent and know that I'm here for you and I'm going to love on you too. But our marriage relationship comes first, and that's what a lot of people don't realize is that the marriage relationship really comes first. So before marrying, you need to make sure that that other parent has the best interests of your children before bringing a blended family together, because you don't want a parent that you marry to come up against your children, because then that'll add a lot of problems. But if you know that that parent has the best interest at heart for your children, then you know it'll work better, and you can trust them into what they're doing with your children and in your relationship.
Yeah, because when you said that it takes, 5 years for the relationship to gel, I'm like, wow, that's a long time. know what I mean? that's a good deal of time, 5 years. It's like, wow. I mean, because some people are like, wow, to even be married for 5 years. I mean, that's awful to say. I'm on my second, I must say. I'm on my second marriage. My first one lasted 6 years. So you're thinking, oh, well, 5 years, it's like that's another whole marriage. No, it's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that's a long time. But, I mean, but on a serious note, I know I'm semi-joking around, but, I could see situations where you have, a 13-year-old child, and by the time they're finally gelling with that parent, they're 18 and maybe even out the house.
Right.
That's a scenario I could see, and like, wow, that doesn't give a lot of, leeway, I guess, for them to build a relationship before they go. But, I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, that's really our experience, because my son was 12 years old prior to me marrying Sean. So when he first came in, it was like my son was so rebellious. It's like he's trying to be disciplinary, and I got to accept him first because it's always been me and you, Mom, And it's like, wow, how do we do this, And we learned that, okay, I have to do more of the disciplining now, so that gel with their relationship can mold. And it did. And it did gradually. And then Sean was able, I think after about like 3 years, somewhere in there, he was able to do a little bit more the discipline. But we were always on one accord. So whatever I say is what he say, or we'll discuss it behind doors. And we always, supported each other. And then to this day, after he turned 18, it was funny because now their relationship is so awesome. They can come together. They work out together. My son comes to him for questions and things like that. So it helped mold him in the stuff he still taught him. So it's never too late. You know, just stay consistent and keep going in it and stay strong in it.
Because having that kind of influence on a child, they're dealing with abandonment. If the other parent isn't there, the child is wondering, who can I trust? I know one of my parents is here, but something is missing. They need love first. So like my wife was saying earlier with parenting, if you coming in as the blended parent, you have to give them that love first. You have to, and then also let them know that I'm not going anywhere, because kids, once they get attached to you, they're attached. So you don't want to have dating someone and then you introduce your child to them and then your child get attached to this person and then you kind of find out the relationship don't work. Now the child is hurt again because they're thinking, well, maybe this can be my mom or my dad, my new
right.
mom or dad. So you have to be very careful. And that's why I tell singles who have a child that you have to really be careful with who you're dating, because you can't just bring your child around anyone, because that child can get attached.
Oh, well, that's fair. And maybe not to the attachment part, but, man, I just a little short personal story. I actually, my daughter loved to talk on the phone, even when she was a kid. This is like, she's like, oh, my gosh, that's 6 years ago. Time flies. You know, but I had, I was dating somebody, and she loved to be on the phone, so I just let her talk to the girl I was dating for a few minutes. And she just, well, let me talk to the phone. I said, okay, just say hi. You know, oh, hi, boy. You know how kids are. And I got, berated from the girl I was dating. I can't believe you made me talk to her. I was like, wow, we were done the next day. You know, because I'm like, you know, if you can't even say hi to my daughter, then you're not open to, you're obviously not open. This is a package deal. You know, when you're a single parent, you know, when you meet anybody like that, it's a package deal. And, you know, I would let that, you know, known right up front, say, look, it's a package deal. So, anyway, as I said, I digress. Go ahead.
No, that's good.
Now, what about if, you covered if there's, you know, a parent where the other parent's not that. Now, what about the situation in which, you know, you have two parents that are married, okay, one's a step and then one's, you know, the biological. And then on the other side, there is the other parent is not married. Mm-hmm. Now, is there any kind of, like, conflict between I know you don't say stepmom, but I'm just doing this for clarification. You know, that the step parent with the biological parent?
Well, there's a lot of times that can bring another component to your relationship. Say, for instance, you're together, and a lot of times we address it as baby mother or baby daddy, you know, kind of thing, but I understand what you're saying. The other parent, because if they're married to someone else, they have a whole other household there. Your child is going from household to household. There's different rules in each household. So you're trying to maintain your own household, but then when they come, you got to adjust the rules and things like that. I think it's really important to stay with your same rules. It's really important that everyone in your household has the same rules and do the same thing. Now, whatever goes on in the other person's house, you have no control over that. But your child will understand that once I'm at dad's house, this is how things go. And I understand that, because you can't disrupt your household because your child is going from one place to the other. You know, and really what they do is they learn the different disciplines in each home, and they can understand those things. But it would be good to be on one accord as far as in the discipline and things you do with the other parent. Because if you can do that together and say, you know, agree on some things of how you're training that child, it would work out smoother for your child, you know, to do that. But sometimes, you know, that relationship with the exes is just not there. You have a lot of issues dealing with that sometimes. And sometimes you get, you know, you can get along, which is good. And if you can, do that. But not changing your rules of your home and treat everyone the same. So if that child comes from the other place and they're in your home now, don't treat them with extra, you know, privileges because they don't live with you. You know, you treat them with the same privileges as all the other kids and everybody in the home.
Because the kids will adapt. They, like Marla was saying, they'll adapt over time. The key is consistency and letting your child know that, hey, I'm sorry that your mom and I didn't work out. Letting your child understand what happened, but at the same time letting them know that I have a new family and I'm going to love you unconditionally, but this is how we do things in our household. And there will be some resistance depending on the age, but you have to stick to your guns. You have to be consistent because they will understand, okay, I'm going over Dad's house this weekend. We can't watch rated R movies. Mom let us watch rated R movies, but my dad won't when I go over his house. I mean, you know, just small, you know, different things.
Mm-hmm.
So they will adapt over time, but you have to be consistent because kids look for those loopholes. They look for where the inconsistency is, and they'll try to catch you on the inconsistency. You know, because kids, they're smart. They're smarter than we think. So that's the key is consistency.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of, you know other multiple scenarios, like, because it seems like so far we've covered, you know, if there's only been one child in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure that's not, of course, the case. I'm sure sometimes there's multiple children. Is there any other extra things that you could tell for the people, you know, how would they handle if it was like, you know, multiple children? Let's say, for instance, if each parent has their own children and they're coming into that blended family. I don't think that's what we've covered yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The interaction between the two, yeah, the children from the separate, you know, people when they get married from their previous relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to answer it?
Okay. Like I was, one of the things is that you have to have the same rules across the board. Because when other, you know, you can't like do something extra for one because it shows biasness and then it causes a lot of conflict between the children.
Mm-hmm.
If you have them all together on the same accord, then you're not going to have one saying, well, you did that for this one and you didn't do that for me and you love them more than me. You don't want to cause that kind of thing to go on. So you want to have everybody on the same rules, you know, the same thing across the board. See, and I understand, too, with the different ages, sometimes you have to, you know, do different things on age-wise, but that happens in a biological family, you know, as well. They have to do things according to the ages. But make sure it's that because of the ages, not so much of, you know, because you're my child or you're that child, you know, his child, you know, you don't want to cause separation. You want that to be on one accord. And also knowing like what he was saying about the other parent, the other parent, you can't allow that other parent to try to control your home as well. The one outside of the home. And
yeah.
I know a lot of times they try to do that.
Oh, there's like competition, you know, there's competition between the two families. You know, I mean, one thing I've experienced, and I don't usually share a lot of personal stuff, but one thing I experience is like there's a competition on who, you know, who gets what and who gives what and who takes what, where, you know, who takes, you know, my daughter where. Like, oh, it's just constant competition. How many clothes are bought or where, all the different places they go. And, oh, my gosh, it's like they're always trying to outdo. You know, the other side's always trying to outdo what you know, what that's like. I can see the frustration there. It's always been like a competition between the two.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You can't really have the competition there because a lot you have, you know, you as a parent have control over the competition wise because you don't have to compete because a lot of times we'll try to keep the kid happy to come to your house. So So let me.
Yeah, yep, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
You know,
yep.
Right. And so what that does is it shows, you know, that favoritism or things like that. So if you keep your rules the same, everything is about the same, you're taking care of that child, you're giving the child what they need, and you do fun things with the child as well. But you don't have to compete with the other parent, because let them do what they do. This is your household, and you know what? Your child will pay more attention to the consistency and knowing that you love them and you have your things under, you know, consistency, than they would for a parent trying to please them, because you can never please that child. They go always want something more and something better. And that doesn't mean that the child loves you more. What it means is that the child just getting what they want, and they're, you know, they could be spoiled or could not. But when you show that consistency, especially the balance of love and discipline, you don't know how much that child really appreciates that until they are grown. And they will come back to you and tell you, thank you for doing that. Because if you're trying to please that child, it's not going to help them any. But it helps them when you have that balance of love and discipline and consistency.
Yeah, it's good when they'll get to the age of understanding, because I tell you what, they get to a point where, like, you do this all the time, you know, because, you know, I spend a lot of time, you know, with the show, and, you know, I do campaigning and stuff like that, politics stuff, and my daughter's always railing on me about it. You spend so much time doing this, blah, blah, blah. All I ever do is see you working all the time, blah, 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 you know, and I'm like, you know, when you realize that, if you appreciate, you appreciate what people do. You know,
right.
But that's a frustrating time when they don't have the understanding. And what do you and not just that specifically, but what would you tell parents who they've noticed that there is that frustration, you know, when it comes, you know, to the children, you know, maybe both just in adapting to the change or the lifestyle, and it's always different in some ways between the two homes. I mean, what do you tell them to do with that frustration, or how's the way to handle that frustration in the context of, you know, what we're talking about?
Well, I think communication is a very important part to that frustration. Not so much, you know, just telling the child everything, because a child can't handle everything that is going on. They have no comprehension of everything that, you know, you go on, like why you have to work so much. They, you know, depending on the age, they may not understand that, like you were saying. But to try to think on the lines of, okay, what does this child need? And like you were saying that, what you could do is just to tell your child, you know what, we're going to set some time. We're going to set dates and times. And if you do that, they'll look forward to that time to spend with them. And you know, prioritize that. Then that way, that child knows that my dad said this, and he's going to do it, and to be consistent in that. And if you do that, they will. It will teach them consistency. It will teach them, you know what, my dad takes time out for me, and it's important to take that time out, and to tell, you know, your job, you know, don't let it run you, because your family should come first. And I mean, I understand that, you know, work is important, and it is, and you do as much as you can, but you always set some time for your family.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Because kids look forward. Kids look forward to spending time with family. Because even with my daughter, we went and bought some board games, and we was playing
that's
Life.
That's exactly what we're talking about doing, Sean.
Yeah.
I was just talking
to
my wife the other day. I'm like, you know, I'm like, I think we need to try to pick up some board games, you know. And
mm-hmm.
you know, well, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but when we were kids, I think we're all about the same age here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's kids all, you know, and this is something I like to speak with. I mean, it's not quite political, but it's about society.
Mm-hmm.
Is when we were kids, there were kids all over the place, you know, playing in the yards and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, I mean, all my friends, you know, that I had, you know, they lived down the street. There was just so many kids. And nowadays it's like you can hear crickets. There's so little kids running around the street. You know, it's like, burr, burr, burr. You know, I'm just like. Oh my God! And what that is, unfortunately, is that, I mean, it's quite plain and it's quite clear, I should say, that people aren't as having as many children as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in my humble opinion, I don't think that's good. I mean, I understand the financial aspects of it, you know, and if I was able, I'd have a heck of a lot more kids than I do. But you know, things don't always work out that way.
Mm-hmm.
But But yeah, I mean, as a society, I think the acceptance of having children, it's kind of moved away. I think society's kind of moved away from the acceptance of having, you know, more children. And I think personally, you know, that's a detriment to our society.
That's true. I think so, because, and I understand what you're saying, because like you say, Robert, when we was younger growing up, we were outside playing, spending time with friends. And I mean, I remember we used to have to come in when the street lights came on.
Wow, that's almost like a universal. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
I remember that. I'm like, oh, come on. You're like with those rocks at the street light. Like, it's not on, Dad. I'm sorry, yeah. I don't care, street light.
Yeah, and you know what? And you're right. And I think what happened is technology, I believe technology is a double-edged sword. I seen a picture the other day that a picture on Facebook that said your parents told you to go outside and play. And then in the picture, the kid was outside with his computer.
Yes, I've seen that. Have you seen the nose sticking over the windowsill and he's got a controller or something?
Yeah. And I'm just
God,
wow.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, I mean, you have people who send text messages, and they in the same house, they're sending text messages. I'm like,
my
so
daughter
can...
does that. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so social media and the Internet, it's a double-edged sword because it has its advantages. But as kids, so what happens is, and then not to get off into another topic, but you have to be careful about letting your kids play outside because you don't know the people next door. We kind of live in this isolated society now where
mm-hmm.
we don't know our neighbors. And if
That's
we do,
so
we don't.
That is so true.
Mm-hmm. So
yes, I probably know one neighbor, two neighbors on my whole street. That is so true, yeah.
Yeah, so I remember growing up, when we were growing up, I mean, everybody on the same block, we all knew each other's parents. When I was growing up, my parents, my mom gave the right to let other parents discipline me and tell on me and stuff like that, so they all worked together.
Oh, my gosh, I hate it when that happened. This is couch. I know I'm done telling little stories here. But Mrs. Couch, I remember one so clearly. I can't remember how old I was, but I was in the summertime. I'm in the backyard. We had an old oven in the backyard, right? And I was climbing on top of the oven. Mrs. Couch calls, oh, Robbie's back there climbing on that oven. I got in trouble for it. Robbie, you need to get up. I'm like, oh, and she was known. This woman was known as the snitch of the neighborhood. Oh, if you see Mrs. Couch standing on your porch, I mean, you'd be like, oh, my, there's Mrs. Couch. Wait till she goes in. Okay, she's in. Now we can, you know, get away with something or whatever.
Yeah.
If she was on that porch, you know she's watching, like, she's going to call Mom. She's going to call Mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's the way things were. I mean, and like you said, it's universal because I had that. I had a lady that stayed upstairs from us, and she didn't stay on the porch as much, but she would look out her window. And somehow she knew everything, what was going on. This lady was like 70-something. And, I mean, sometimes I would, like, you know, even cut school. I would cut school sometimes, and she would see me come. And then my mom would get off of work, and she'd be like, so they let out school early? I'm like, no.
Oh, man.
You know, just stuff like that. But I said all that to say is that kids that we don't know our next-door neighbors, so why would we let our child play with the kid next door when we don't know the neighbors? And then on top of that, and this is why I tell people having integrity and stuff like that is important, because people are – you get people one way and then they're another way. You know, you never – and not to put scare tactics on nobody, but you don't know who's doing what behind closed doors.
Yeah.
So you're a little nervous about letting your kids stay over somebody's house. When we were growing up, we didn't have that. We knew if Mr. Johnson was the street drunk. We knew who worked the job every day. I mean, you know, everybody was who they were. We knew that the guy down the street that, you know, he had all the women, so we would tell, our parents would tell us, you don't go past this certain house because he's a trip when he out there with them women, you know. So it was like back then, everybody, yeah, everybody was like who they were, and they weren't ashamed of it. So nowadays, you get, you know, Mr. Johnson, nowadays, he might be into kiddie porn. You don't know, but, you know, all of a sudden you see the police come handcuffing him, and you like, he gave candy to the kids every day. Oh, Lord, now you got to go tell your kids. So what happens is we put these restrictions. So if we let our kids play with other kids, they got to be like a Chuck E. Cheese. Invisible. We have to be protective because we know people, but we don't know people, if that's making any sense.
Oh, no, that's so true. And I'm glad you brought that up this evening because, you know, I mean, one of the issues I do, I mean, and I'm not going to get political because, you know, I shy away from that, you know, on Wednesday nights because, you know, to talk about other things. And it's not quite political, it's more social. But that's such, that's something I never thought about before. And we do cover, you know, not as much right now because we're covering other topics, but it's something I want to discuss down the line is, you know, about society and the culture and how it's changed and not necessarily all for the better. And yeah, I mean, I never thought about when I think about, you know, the culture and how things changed. Now, I do think, you know, about in trying to analyze, as I mentioned earlier, about people having less children, you know, and the detriments of that, but I think that is causing to society in multiple ways. But also, as you said, the relationships that we're not forming that our parents used to form with our neighbors, just not seeing that happen. And yeah, I think what we're losing is in this technical age, and it's kind of funny because we've seen movies about it. You know, all the people, you know, technology's taken over now, you know, but we're starting to live it. You know, I think we're actually, you know, you've heard the phrase, life imitating art. And actually, I think people who are in control, but have a big part to play in the entertainment and the art industry, they know that. And I'm going to go off on a tangent just for a second, and then I'm going to get back on topic is, the entertainment and the, industry like TV shows and what have you, they know, and I'm a real firm believer of life imitating art, and I think they purposely put some things like on TV or things of that nature to make people think, oh, well, this is the norm, you know what I mean, to try to convince people through entertainment that this is the norm when it's really not, and then life will start to mold itself when people be like, oh, hey, well, I guess that is okay because they see it on TV all the time. You know, and I think, and I, as I said, that don't have anything to do as much with what we're talking about, you know, specifically, you know, but that's just something that I've noticed, you know, over time.
That's a very good point, though. That's a very good point. I mean, it's because we can, like you said, it becomes a normalcy once we see it on TV, and it becomes accepted where nowadays, and I also think about, too, with kids, how we have cable, we have, I'm 35 years old. I remember TV actually went off at a certain time.
Yeah.
You
get the Pledge of Allegiance, not the Pledge of Allegiance. You get America the Beautiful or something. And
Yeah. And the TV would, 4, 3, 2, 1. And the TV would turn off, and that was it for, was it for TV. So what happens is nowadays you can watch SpongeBob at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh yeah, and I do. Well, actually, that's not true. I'm actually on Mark Prasik's show at 2:00 in the morning, and I'm going to give a little plug for Mark's show, live video chat. And this is what you would have heard if I didn't put my mic on mute for about 4 minutes when everybody was silent and wondering what the heck happened to Bard's Logic political talk show. What happened for 4 minutes? Well. My phone was on mute, or, you know, microphone, whatever. And what you would have heard was, in part, is Mark Prasik's show is from 10 until midnight, and the folks get the opportunity to contribute both with video and audio clips, video clips, not really audio clips, articles, things of that nature, kind of a show prep sort of thing that will be shared on the second segment of Mark Prasik's live video chat. Which is from midnight until 2, and of course, these are 2 hours on Eastern time. And you can find that on Facebook if you have a Facebook, if you're on Facebook, and it is go into the search engine and you just put in Newt Now, NEWTNOW. And then also you can find it actually through the website on Bard's Logic Political Talk website on the About the Show page. Just scroll down and you'll see a little link or a little button rather that has a link to the conservative conversation, or it's been kind of changed or added to the Patriots, and I keep always forgetting the second word, Patriot Journalist Network. So it's new. It's only been this week, so I haven't got that one pinned down yet. But you could go there and you can find the link to Mark Prezik's show, and I encourage people to go there because it's really neat show, and Mark's a great guy. Mm-hmm. And actually, he might even be in the chat, and hello, Mark, but anyway, I'll leave the floor back to you. But before I do so, I'd like to ask if you guys would like to chime in about, and then I've got someone who's on the line who might want to ask a question. If you guys would like to speak on or finish, you know, whatever you guys want to talk on before I just talk about other shows. But the three, and this is interesting, the three are even better retreat. So if you, you know, if you want to finish off what we were talking about earlier and then segue into that, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're definitely excited about the three are even better marriage retreat. We come in October 25th through the 27th in Payson, Arizona, which is about 90 minutes from Phoenix. We'll be hosting our first marriage retreat, and we're going to discuss during that retreat, we're going to talk about knowing your spouse. Who is your spouse? Because sometimes you can be married to someone and really not know them. You know, you're doing all the married things, but you just really don't know them. So we're going to talk about, do you really know and understand your spouse? And we're going to talk about money. We're going to talk about expectations in marriage. We'll talk about conflict resolution and communication. We're going to talk about sex. And we're going to talk about how to fail-proof your marriage. So these are different sessions that we're going to have during the two-night stay. So it can you can see it on Facebook. My wife and I have been posting it on Facebook. Our event planner, she's been posting it on Facebook. So you could just look up three or even better in the search engine on Facebook to get more information about it.
Now, three are even better is an interesting title. And if you can elaborate, elaborate for that. Oh, I couldn't get that out, could I? Elaborate on that, Doug. Yeah, I tell you what, I'm tongue-tied. While you're talking, I think I'm getting a little bit of this water here. Go ahead.
We came up with the title because I wrote the workbook, Three Are Even Better. It comes from Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 12 in the Bible, where it talks about three are even better, for a triple full cord isn't easily broken. And I use that saying that the benefits of having God in your marriage, when God is leading the marriage, and then it's you and your spouse. So it's three are even better. So that's how we came up with the concept for the book. So we use that, and you know, of course it's catchy because people thinking, wow, they have an exciting marriage. They talk about three are even better, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, so they like, I want them to counsel us, you know. So,
So you're using subliminal messaging in order to. I'm just joking, John. I'm just kidding. But it is very clever. It is very clever. And I guess it's kind of, you know, I've heard of the old, of course, we've all heard of the old adage, you know. Just a little background, a small amount of background. I was brought up Catholic, but so you heard, you know, my mom would always say, all those families that pray together stay together, you know, is what my mom used to say. But so is that kind of the essence of what the title's about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really the what happens when God is in your marriage. Because for my wife and I, and I tell people this all the time, people say, what made you marry your wife? Because we married in 7 months. We married in 7 months, and I never knew her before. It wasn't like we were friends for 6 years and then we married. I never knew her. So.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going somewhere with this. When we were dating, one of the key things that really helped me
make the decision with her being wife was her respect and her honor of God, a healthy fear of God, if you will. And I knew that if I would marry her, that she would carry herself in a certain way, that she will honor God in a certain way and honor me as her husband. And we just have the same belief system. So I knew that was going to really, really help us have a successful marriage. Not to mention that, you know, she was beautiful too. That always helps. But
yeah.
Well,
because man, we're shallow. We're shallow like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, right?
Right. It's okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, she's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get a little brownie points. That's all.
I'd rather have the brownie myself, but hey, that's okay.
Well, you could probably have both if you do it right.
Well, there you go. Actually, I think I'd settle for dinner right now. I'll do that after the show. That's okay. But you bring up a point I'd like to discuss, if that's okay. Is and you two are of the same faith. But mm-hmm. one thing I think is happening a lot out there, and I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it is what it is. But there's a mm-hmm. lot of a lot of couples who have different faiths.
Mm-hmm.
So now, drawing upon your experience or knowledge, in what ways would you tell people who are of different faiths to handle that? Because some faiths might even be almost like opposite of each other. Well. Maybe some. I mean, some are close, but some are.
Right.
Some of the dogmas are definitely opposite, or one doesn't believe in one thing, one the other, or mm-hmm. things of that nature. But I'm babbling, so go ahead and just.
For my wife and I, and I know that is huge. That's something that's huge, but I'm not for it because a lot of times you can spend, and from what I've seen. Over the years is instead of working on things to help enhance your marriage, working on your finances, your children and stuff like that, a lot of times when you have different faiths, you can actually spend most of your time, especially if you're strong in your faith. Now, if you really don't, it's like you're cool with God and stuff like that. I pray every so often. You really don't, use your faith as much. And I can kind of understand that. You're like, hey, God is cool with me. We live our life. But if you have a strong conviction in those areas, you really can spend a lot of time arguing with your spouse about certain things. And it can really destroy a marriage because you guys are coming from two different faiths, and you can actually spend a lot of time on that instead of working on the children and working on your money and stuff like that, because you can easily get caught up in, well, I don't want my child acting like this, or so I really don't condone it, because there's so much going on in the world today. The last thing I need to be fighting with my wife is about is our faith.
I really think it's important too that you have to be on one accord. You have to become together in order to do it, and that's where it's hard, because you have to work together, and it's hard to work together a lot of times when you're not thinking the same or you don't believe the same. But not saying that it can't be done, because anything is possible to do, but it makes it a lot harder to work at. So your communication has to be a lot stronger, and you have to compromise a lot more when you have different beliefs. So then it becomes, it becomes a problem, but it can be done. It's just going to take a lot of work.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know that happens, maybe not where they're almost like, polar opposites. I mean, I know that does exist, So I just leave it on that one. So you said, now how long the retreat, how long was the retreat that you're having?
Yes, it's two nights. It's two nights and 3 days. It'll be a Thursday. It's Thursday night, Thursday night and Friday night, and then we'll leave Saturday afternoon. So it's 2 nights, 3 days, and it's just going to be awesome. I mean, I've posted a lot of the pictures on Facebook. My wife and I, we've been there already. So when we seen it, we said we have to have the marriage retreat here, because the biggest thing that get me about marriage is this. People will spend money quicker to get divorced than to spend the money to enhance their marriage. You have people who, I mean, like out here in Arizona, you will see signs outside, $200 divorce. I mean, we know it costs more than that. But
it costs more than that.
But people think, wow, $200, I can go and pull $200 out and divorce her. But I tell people, why don't you fight for your marriage and spend the necessary money to help keep your marriage together? Because people ask us, and our marriage isn't perfect, but after 10 years of marriage, people ask us, what do you guys do? And I say, hey, we have date night. That helps a lot, giving my wife my undivided attention, things like that. And then also spending the necessary money for your marriage. Because I don't mind, because when we were dating, we didn't mind spending all our money on them when we were dating. You know, then we get married, we're like, hey, I got to pay the electric bill. You know, we can't go out this weekend.
Right.
So,
part of being married is, I guess, dealing with the bills. And that brings it to a small part is when my wife and I get married, we got married in her church. And I like the priest of her church. He's a really cool guy. And when he's talking about, I guess, doing the sermon or homily or what have you, portion of it, he talks about you know the joy in conflict or something like that. You know, he's talking about the joy in conflict. I'm like, joy in conflict. He said, I'm like, but he explained the phrase as well. You have conflict that's going on, whether it's paying bills or, if you're having a hard time paying bills or this and that. Because you have, where the joy comes in is you're doing this together.
Mm-hmm.
He says, because you're dealing with this hardship,
mm-hmm.
but you're not alone.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You're this is part of life, and what you do is you enjoy the fact that you are experiencing that, even though it's a hardship, but the experience you're having is shared with your spouse. And then you find joy that in it, that, you're still having a experience that you're both sharing together as a couple. And I thought, wow, that's pretty profound. I mean, whether you're going through something hard, you realize, hey, I'm not going through this alone. And I've got this person here with me, and we're going through this together. As a couple. So I thought that was pretty profound, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. And that's what happens, because when you go through different things, it strengthens your relationship, because you're growing. Every time you go through a problem, actually when you get through the problem, you have grown some. You have matured. And in a relationship, it brings your relationship even closer, because it's like you get a cut from the problem. But when you stay together and endure through it, that's that time of healing. So then you heal, and then, there's a scar there, but that scar reminds you how we came together and we healed together and we've grown, So it's important that you go through the things together, because then it makes your bond even stronger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I tell it's something I always tell singles. I tell singles who plan on marrying, I tell them to stay single, because right now you're still loving conditionally. You're still loving if it's conditional. If she pick up 20 pounds, I'm a divorcer. If he loses his job, I'm a divorce him. So marriage is, like I told my wife, hey, this is it. this is me. This is it. But the cool thing about it is continue to grow and to continue to, because your spouse never stay the same. And I think that's what happened with a lot of marriages, because they think their spouse is the same person they were 7 years ago, and they might have changed. You know, you get older. I mean, there were certain things you liked when you was 22, but now there's certain things you like when you're 32.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is you still have, so you still think your spouse is this one way, but they've totally changed. And what happens is the spouse either get left behind or they just don't know what's going on. They feel like they're out of the loop. They don't know what happened to my spouse. What happened? So I always take the time to ask my wife, you know, how are you doing? What's going on? Just doing a little inventory. I always tell people, do inventory on your marriage. It's just like when you're doing inventory in a warehouse or in Walmart or something. You know, if something's not selling, get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it brings to a good point I want to bring up tonight is some little tidbits, if you don't mind sharing, little tidbits that such as taking inventory that you share with the people who you do counseling with or talk with through your ministry, that you tell them that, you know, just a little things here and there that you think, would help out, you know, a marriage just go by, a little smoother. So do you got any little tidbits that beyond what you just said that you could share with us, or?
Yeah, sure. I think a lot of it comes with knowing who your spouse is, what they like. If for my wife and I, she likes movies. I like movies too. But I know she really likes quality time. And then knowing your spouse's love language. What is your spouse's love language? Is it acts of service? Is it gifts? Is it touch? Is it words of affirmation? Is it quality time? You need to know these things. So that way you can continue to build on that. Because when you don't know what your spouse likes, you're shooting in the dark. So I understand my wife, she loves words of affirmation. She loves touch. So I make it my business that I touch her. touch is huge for her.
She's ignorant of there. Are you touching her now? I'm just joking. Don't answer that.
No. We only got about 5 in today, so you got 2 more to go.
Yeah.
Not today.
Well, there you go. Go ahead. I digress. I'm putting you guys off on a tangent. Yeah.
Oh, no problem. So that's the thing, understanding your spouse. And I'll never forget a pastor said, you marry a moving target. Your spouse never really stays the same. Yeah, you made this moving target. There were certain things I liked my wife that she would wear 6 years ago, but now my taste has changed. I'm like, I don't like that no more. Can you wear this? people actually get frustrated because their spouse matured. They like, so you're not who you used to be anymore. Not in a bad way, but it's just because they changed. You know, maybe she used to like watching Lifetime. Now she don't like watching Lifetime anymore. Simple stuff like that. So really doing inventory on your spouse is huge.
You know, two topics you brought up earlier that piqued my ears, and I would think maybe piqued the ears in the audience, is you mentioned you guys talk to them. Of course, the subject didn't come up. And in the retreat, is you mentioned sex, and you mentioned what was it?
Affair-proof your marriage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Affair avoidance or something. Yeah, can you touch on what you guys covered in those topics, those two topics?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Affair proof in your marriage. I actually kind of got the term from a guy named Willard Hartley, who wrote a book called His Needs, Her Needs. I just decided to expound on it a little more, gave him his credit, stuff like that. So, but affair proof in your marriage. Now, I'll tell people this. You can't control your spouse from doing what they want to. You can't control them. Because cheating is a two-way street. People think a lot of times, oh, he cheated on me, I want a divorce. He was wrong. But actually, it was a two-way street, because what happened was somebody wasn't playing their part. So a lot of times people get, they always blame the cheater. You're wrong. You cheated on me. But actually it was something that the other spouse wasn't doing. Now, am I condoning cheating? No. But people rarely look at what was I doing wrong. And have you ever noticed, by the way, that it's always our spouse's fault? It's never our fault. You know, we always talk about if she did this or if he did that. It's like, what about you? So even my prayers to God at night a lot of time is, how can I become a better husband? Instead of saying, well, God, you need to change her. My biggest thing is, how can I become a better husband? How can I become a better father? Do inventory in yourself, because a lot of times divorce happens because we put the blame off on somebody else as opposed to us being held accountable.
Well, I think one thing that was a big influence on my decisions of what kind of husband to be is I had the benefit of having four older sisters. And so, of course, you know, and I'm pretty close to my, you know, the folks in my family. And so, you know, I'd be over my sisters or they'd be over my house, whatever. And they complain about their husband. And I'm like, that's what I don't want to happen. I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want to be, you know, like the brother-in-laws. I'm not going to be like my brother-in-laws because I'm not going to have my wife on the her sisters to complain about me. They taught me what kind of husband not to be. I am not going to do that, or you know, or I will in turn. Since I'm not doing that, I'm doing something else. You know, I'm not going to be that way because I do not want my wife going to her sisters going, you know, that Robbie just didn't do this, or he just didn't do that, or this or that. So I'm not going to be that way.
Exactly.
But I just want to put this. Go ahead.
No, I'm done.
No, I'm just going to put this out to the audience. I told people that we would open up just in case anyone would like to call in and ask any questions directly. And that call number is area code 347-945-7428. I did notice someone that was in the switchboard earlier, and perhaps they got shy or they didn't want to ask the question anymore. I think maybe they might have called in because they couldn't hear my four-minute interlude where I was being stupid. So, you know, but if they'd like to call in and ask any questions, or if anyone would like to pose a question in the chat, feel free to do so, and I will convey that to John or Londina. And so while we're waiting, that's what I meant, waiting, then I'll relinquish the floor back to you guys. If there's anything else you want to add, that you maybe projects you're going to be working on, or anything else in the future that's going to go beyond the retreat.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're working on in 2013. We'll have a conference for singles and marriage preparation and how to prepare before you say I do. Being instead of looking for the right person, learning how to be the right person. So we're looking forward to that in 2013. That's going to be great. We have that coming down the pipe. And then also my wife and I, we're going to be co-authoring a book coming out pretty soon. So that's pretty much what we got working right now going into 2013.
Now you plan on you've got a number of books out.
If you'd like to tell a little more about the different books you have out, that'd be great. And then, of course, where people can find them, they can, you know, buy them, so.
Mm-hmm. My first book was entitled If You Apply These Principles, God is More Practical Than We Think. That came out in 2008. That was my first book. Then in 2009, I wrote a book entitled It's the Woman You Gave Me, and I was talking about how we can get past playing the blame game in our marriages and our relationships, and, you know, instead of using our past and stuff as crutches. I talk about that, overcoming stuff that happened to us in our past, getting past the blame game. Then in 2010, I wrote Three Are Even Better, which is the 8-week workbook, which we're basing our retreat off of. And I just released my latest book, which is entitled Wisdom, Preventing Problems Before They Happen, and it just came out. So those books can be purchased on my website at neveragainministries.com, all one word.
Great. And as I said earlier, which everybody I think might have missed when I was talking about it earlier, so you could find a link also to the website for Never Again Ministries on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website as well. Just go to the featured guests page, and you will find a link to his website, as well as if you know someone who would like to listen to tonight's episode of this interview with Ladina, sorry about that, and Sean, they can just direct them to the website, and I have a link that will go to the archive of the show so they can listen to it later.
Awesome, great.
Okay, well, there you go, great. You put it in the chat for the people who... Now, one good thing I like about Blog Talk Radio is that they have an archive and people can come in and listen to the shows, even if it's not live, which is great because actually for this show, I get so many more people listening to the shows on archives than live, and I understand why that is. I mean, people can listen to it at their own convenience. You know, so, and they can actually download an episode. I just got done downloading an episode. Well, I'm the host, so I think other people can do this as well. But they can download episodes to their smartphone. See, I took some smarts to remember that for a second. But, so they can download it to their iPod or their smartphone. Well, if there's anything else, folks, that you'd like to add, I'm trying to see. Let's see if anyone called in. I guess people are being shy. About calling in for questions. That happens. That's okay. That's why I like the chat aspect on other night shows, because sometimes if people aren't as comfortable asking questions in the calling in, they could do it in the chat. And plus, I'll talk people's ears off. That's why I do a Blog Talk Radio show. And then this was a pretty organic and unscripted interview, and I appreciate both you guys for coming in tonight. But if there's definitely anything you'd like to add, feel free to go ahead and do so.
Well, I just wanted to say thanks once again for having my wife and I on your show. Definitely had an awesome time, and we would always feel free to, we would always love to come back. So thanks for having us on your show.
Well, tell you what, definitely. If you'd like to, maybe we'll have you come back after the, at some point after the retreat. And then you could come in and tell the folks, give us an update on how the retreat went and things of that nature. Now, do you guys is there like tickets or people go in or how do they do that?
Yes, they can purchase the tickets online on our website at neveragainministries.com. They can purchase it off of our Eventbrite form on our website. So you can just go to our website and look up Marriage Retreat. And then you'll see all the information that's needed there.
Oh, great, great. And then it's in Arizona, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
October 25th through the 27th.
I'm sorry, can you repeat those again?
I'm sorry, October 25th through the 27th.
Oh, okay, good, good. Well, it's not on Halloween, which is great, because, then I would definitely have to miss something, because Halloween is my favorite holiday. So... I'm Irish and the whole Celtic thing, So, okay, well, all right. Well, thank you very much for coming in. And let's see if this letter is Cindy. Okay, I was reading something in the chat, but I get distracted. Sometimes I go to a chat to see if any people chiming in, but once again, thank you very much for coming in tonight. I really appreciate it, and I'm so glad to hear that your wife came in this time, Sean. She was definitely a pleasure to hear, and we will speak with both of you later. And thanks again, I appreciate it.
All right, thanks for having me.
Good luck. Right. You're welcome. Good luck with your retreat.
All right, thanks.
All right, take care. Good night. Good night, folks.
Bye.
Okay, folks, thank you very much for listening. We still got a little bit of time here, a little bit about a half an hour on Bard's Logic Political Talk. And sometimes on Wednesdays we have – thank you, Lugnut. I appreciate them coming in. It was a great show. I like doing these unscripted and organic shows where, whatever question pops off the top of my head, I'll ask. And if anyone else has questions, they can ask as well. Now, what I'd like to do tonight at the show is I'm going to put a link in the in the chat to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. Oh, one second. There we go. up that's the Get Involved page. I'll take people just to, straight to the home page. So, and I'll test that link, make sure it's going to be good. Mm-hmm. More silence. No, I didn't hit the mute button again, folks. It's just waiting for the page. I want to make sure that the link that I provided in the chat worked. And what you can see here on I've had the website up for a couple weeks now, maybe about 2-3 weeks. And so I've, you know, finally got it, you know, up and running. I think I had it totally up and running as of last week. And for the folks who were on it, you could see that it has the home page and the About the Show page. And as I've mentioned earlier, at the bottom of the About the Show page, you'll be able to find a link to the Conservative Conversation. And this is the part where I usually say in the beginning of the show, but I'll say it now since people missed it because of my brain freeze earlier, is that I mentioned the Conservative Conversation, which is now the Patriots Journalist Network, in which you will find a series of shows, including this one. But you also see Charlotte Dively's show, which is Pray USA. And her show is on between 9 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern time. And all these times I'm going to say is Eastern time. And then, you know, you have mine from 8 to 10, and that's mine is Sunday through Thursday. Charlotte's is Monday through Friday. And then from 10 until midnight and sometimes later, you have Sammy Sanford's show, which is, as I said, from 10 until midnight, sometimes afterwards. And his show is Constitutional Conservatives Unite. But also from 10 to midnight, you have, and I mentioned earlier, Mark Prasick's show, which is live video chat, which in the first segment, you can, for those of you who haven't heard this earlier, both in the live chat and archives and other venues that you're listening to the show, that you can contribute videos and articles, kind of be a part of what the content will be in the second segment, which is open for discussion. And that second segment is between midnight and 2 a.m. and sometimes runs further. And then also on Friday and Saturday evenings, during this time slot of 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., you have the Rex and Tech Show. So, you know, each person has their own little way of doing things, and there's a flavor for everyone. So please, I encourage you to visit the other shows, the Conservative Conversation or the Patriot Journalist Network. So I appreciate it. And also, if you like the show and you have not already, if you're listening to this live or on the archives, just go to the little follow button that you'll find under the icon of the show and follow the show, and I'd really appreciate it. Now, one thing, if you visit the website, I try to get it where you don't necessarily have to even go to any one particular place to hear the show. You can actually listen to the show live and in archives. Or at least the recent archives of the four shows, from the player, media player I have on the homepage of the website, and that's under the Listen Live section if you're looking at the website right now that was provided in the chat. And underneath that is Bard Selection, which I picked one of my favorite shows, and I put it on there for people to listen to. Currently, it is the interview I had with Aubrey Ashburn, and I interviewed her last Thursday, and she's someone I haven't known for years, but I've listened to her music for a number of years. And she's the one who did the music you heard in the beginning of the show before my 4 month silence. So I know I'm playing that up. It was just kind of disastrous, and not disastrous, but anyway, I digress. But anyway, for that, and then about the show, I just have the times and the on the website. And what this show's about, what we focus on, and one of the things we definitely focus on is this election and what I'm fighting for, among others, of course, is for a brokered convention. And I'm a Newt Gingrich supporter, and that's who I would like to see get the nomination for the GOP for the election in
November. And then one of the most interesting pages, I would have to say, is the Get Involved page. And that's one of the goals of Bard's Logic Political Talk, and also not just this show, but all the shows of the Conservative Conversation or the Patriots Journalist Network, is that we want to inform the public of with information that you may very well not find from the mainstream media or the so-called conservative media. And on the Get Involved page, I have some video clips, one of which is about ways to contact the RNC and the GOP. It's got some contact information. The thing I'd like people to do is contact the RNC and tell them, you know, to open the door for a brokered convention. And there's another, okay, Slugnut is adding something in here for me. Let me just take that from the chat. Letter from National Committee. Okay. I will definitely, not today. Let's see. Let me peruse through this. Now it's on to November. Okay, I will read this, and then I will probably put it on one of my next shows. And I appreciate that, Lugnut. Thank you very much for putting that in there. And back to the website, and hopefully people are checking that out. And here, I'm going to put some contact information in the chat to the Republican National Committee. And for people who don't have the benefit of seeing the chat because they're listening on the archives, is this. There's another article that I shall check out from Lugnut. Thank you very much. And, excuse me. And the way to get a hold of the Republican National Committee, you go to 310 First Street, SE, Washington, D.C., 20003, or you call them by area code 202-863-8500. And you're welcome, Lugnut. You're welcome. So back to the website, you also hear the first video you see is the video clip for the opening song that you hear on most nights, which is We Are Soldiers. And since I did not play that at the beginning, I will go ahead and play it now for the audience so they can enjoy it. And then I'll describe why this audio or why this song is a good opening song for this show.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Boy, I almost went through my introduction until now. I'm so used to doing that after the show come on. I am out of form tonight, I think. But anyway, the reason I picked that song is there was the video that was a video, I should say, that is associated with it. Is one to try to was talking about the conservatives coming together and fighting against a Mitt Romney nomination, which that fight still goes on today. And we must stand shoulder to shoulder, much like the discussion of the show that I had last night about conservatives and libertarians uniting together, because it's very important to, you know, for the fight against the moderates and the rhinos in the Republican Party. And you can actually listen to that show's last night, that last night show archive. Just go into the archives, and the name of it is Conservatives and Libertarians Unite. So it'd be great if somebody could go on there and listen to it and know more of what I'm talking about. And so that's what that link was for. And, you know, shoulder to shoulder, you know, we've got to stand together. We have to be united in order to fight, a huge fight that's in front of us. We have a lot of obstacles because, you know, just of the power that the RNC and the establishment Republican Party have, and it's going to take, you know, a large number of folks in order to battle against that and their money. So, anyway, so on the website, I just, you know, put there as a little paragraph after hearing that. It says, the RNC and the GOP establishment are once more trying to force a moderate down our throats in Mitt Romney. And I'm asking on the Get Involved page to contact them and let them know your displeasure and that you would not support Romney with your money or your time, and that conservatives have been marginalized no more, that they have been marginalized in this election cycle, and to tell the RNC and the GOP establishment no more. Now, the next clip I'm going to play is because you're not going to hear this from the mainstream media, and you're not going to hear this from the so-called conservative media, because the mainstream media are for Obama. They're Obama supporters, and they want Mitt Romney because Mitt Romney is the weakest candidate, indeed, to go up against Barack Obama for many ways that we will cover on other shows and have covered on other shows. People can listen to the archives. And you're not going to hear from conservatives because they've already put, you know, the conservatives or so-called conservative media, they've already jumped into the bed of Romney and been shilling for Romney pretty much from the start. And so because of this, Mitt Romney would not be vetted by them, but he must be vetted, especially before the GOP primary at the end of this month in Tampa. And the information that is in the video needs to be put out to the public before the convention for people to know what we're really going to be up against, because the Obama administration is going to be no holds barred after the convention, and they're going to put everything out there. And it's better that it's known now so there could be a change, because Mitt Romney does not have to be the nominee. It's up to the delegates now. So if we want to have not have a disastrous election this season and have the Republicans have an opportunity to defeat Barack Obama in November, I think getting out this information is paramount. Now, this video, or not video, but audio about to play contains information that gives more evidence, as I said, for the need for a broken convention. And once again, I like for people to tell their RNC chairperson from their state, you can write them a letter or call them, and that is the chairperson, and say, look, they need to open the door and support a broker convention, because that is the only way that the Republican Party is going to have any hope in defeating Barack Obama. And this is the information that you're going to hear now, but I'm you know, pretty much can guarantee that you'll hear also later from the Obama campaign and the mainstream media.
For most of the 20th century, America's leaders saw the need to help the elderly afford medical care. President Eisenhower championed legislation. It became known as Medicare. Later, President Kennedy fought for it. President Johnson finally signed the Medicare bill into law. And every American president since has worked somehow to protect, improve, or strengthen Medicare.
The social safety net of programs they depend on are exempt from any cuts. Medicare will not be cut.
After all, generations of Americans have relied on Medicare for half a century. But there are those who prey upon it.
Billing Medicare for services they never provided or patients didn't need.
The government says that con artists are draining the lifeblood out of it by filing millions of dollars in phony claims.
At the center of one such Medicare scheme, Mitt Romney. It's a story of fraud, a story of big profits, big lies, and at the time, the biggest criminal fine for healthcare fraud ever levied in Massachusetts history. The company was Damon Clinical Laboratories. In 1989, Mitt Romney's company led a takeover of the medical testing outfit. Romney would manage the company and serve on its board of directors. Under Romney's direction, the company was making huge profits. But as Forbes magazine reported, Romney was supervising a medical testing company guilty of massive Medicare fraud.
At a time when money is tighter than ever, this kind of fraud is costing Americans as much as $90 billion a year.
The company was misleading doctors, ordering complex and unnecessary blood tests, not disclosing to doctors that Damon Corporation was billing Medicare at a much higher rate for each unnecessary test. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, under Romney, the number of tests billed to Medicare on an annual basis skyrocketed. Medicare paid more than $16 million for unnecessary iron deficiency tests alone. But it didn't stop there. Romney's company was ordering unnecessary blood tests for coronary artery disease. In order to ensure doctors wouldn't complain, the company made it difficult for them to receive a coronary risk profile for patients if they didn't go along. For busy doctors caring for their patients, there was little choice. The tests were ordered, and the Damon Corporation would issue another fraudulent bill to Medicare.
We've got to attack the rampant fraud that exists in numerous government programs.
The illegal activity was happening right under Romney's nose. Romney kept a watchful eye on profits, while tens of millions of dollars in illegal Medicare money flowed through the door.
One of the ways I'll do that is by enacting far stiffer penalties for those who steal from taxpayers.
But under Romney, Damon Corporation was the one stealing from taxpayers. The scheme wasn't going completely unnoticed. A task force of federal officials had launched Operation Lab Scam to investigate clinical laboratories who they suspected of fraudulent Medicare billing. Squarely in their sights, Mitt Romney's Damon Corporation. It is unclear whether Mitt Romney was aware of Operation Lab Scam. But his timing in 1993 is suspicious. While federal agents under the U.S. Attorney's Office were busy closing in on Damon Corporation, Romney was busy orchestrating a sale of Damon to Corning. Finally, a seven-page subpoena was served on the Damon corporate headquarters on August 24, 1993. In an incredible coincidence shown in SEC filings, Romney's company sold Damon to Corning in August 1993, at the very same time the Fed subpoena was issued. Two whistleblowers came forward under Corning, and Medicare fraud charges were brought. The systemic fraud under Romney's reign finally ended. The Boston Globe reported Romney was completely unaware of any investigation. But later, Romney changed his story, claiming that he helped uncover the fraud and the illegal activity, asking the board's lawyers to investigate, saying the board took corrective action. But both federal investigators and Corning rebuffed Romney's claims, stating that Corning stopped the fraud, not Mitt Romney. In fact, Romney never reported the fraudulent Medicare activities to authorities. In 1996, The Damon Corporation pled guilty to defrauding Medicare. Damon was ordered to pay the U.S. government $119 million to resolve all federal and Medicaid criminal and civil claims. The government said the settlement covered literally millions of fraudulent claims. At the time, it was the largest criminal fine for healthcare fraud ever levied in Massachusetts history. Incredibly, when Romney's firm orchestrated a sale of Damon Corporation to Corning Incorporated, it tripled its investment, walking away with a $12 million profit. The Boston Globe reports Romney personally pocketed $500,000 from the deal. In a now familiar Mitt Romney refrain, thousands lost their jobs and the company went bankrupt. Cost to American taxpayers? The Boston Globe put the figure at nearly $40 million. Just 10 years later, no one might suspect Mitt Romney had been at the center of one of the greatest Medicare frauds of the 1990s.
I can't wait to get my hands on Washington.
One longtime reporter for the Boston Globe and co-author of the new biography, The Real Romney, put it this way.
I certainly think that there's reason to question, if you're looking at sort of who he is politically, sort of what he really is inside.
Even more troubling, Romney denies his business ever had any dealings at all with Medicare.
Did Bain ever do any work with any company which did any work with the government like Medicare?
We didn't do any work with the government.
Okay, folks, and the last part of that audio.
Now, Sunday night, we are going to cover the report where Romney got first money in order to start. This will be a part of the investigation. I'm going to have that part. Now, back to the website, towards the bottom of the Get Involved, I have something here called Help Save a Republican Mascot. And I have that you can save one of these iconic beasts. And, of course, the mascot is the Republican mascot. And the link I have is a page that includes how to help young elephants orphaned as a result of poaching. And also, you can look on ways of fostering an elephant and elephant conservation. And so people could check that out. And for only, I believe, and I'll look this up again, but you could do so yourself, is that is for only like $50 a year you can open. That's a year, so that's pretty good. You know, foster one of these creatures, as iconic creatures. So, if you know, they have a link at the bottom of the website where it just says Save an Elephant. So you can click that. Also, I have a Give page of the website in which if you go to the Give page, you will see a link or a button to the Shedrick Wildlife Trust. And what the Shedrick Wildlife Trust does, it is an organization that helps elephants who have been orphaned from poaching in Kenya. And as I said, you will find a link to their website on the Get Involved page of Bard's Logic Political Talk. And so, excuse me. And so I really would ask people to go ahead and check that out. I understand it's, hard economic times, but as I said, for $50 a year, you can really help out. And then read on more of, of what they do. And actually, next Wednesday, I believe I'm going to be covering more about the project on saving elephants. And I'm working towards trying to get some people who belong to that organization on the show so I can interview them on it. So the way I like for the new people in here, and thank you very much for coming, and if you really enjoyed tonight's show, I really would appreciate if you'd follow the show, which if you've been here the whole time, you've heard me say that you just go to the follow button underneath the icon and click it, and it's pretty much that simple. I think all that does is just send, emails to remind you about the upcoming programs. And the reason I say I think it does that is because I don't follow myself, so I'm not really sure. I just know that I follow others, other shows, and it just sends me an email that the show's coming up. But the way in which I like to end the show is with the song, and this song is done by someone I got the pleasure and honor to interview last Thursday, and you can listen to the interview on the archives, either on Blog Talk Radio, or you can actually listen to it from the front page of the website. So if you just go to the Bard's Logic Little Talk, you can see under Bard Selection, there's a little play button. You just click that, and you will be able to hear the interview with Aubrey Ashburn, and she is an award-winning international, because she travels internationally and sings, vocalist and songwriter. It was a really great interview, and nice people to listen to that. And that being said, I'd like to thank everyone for coming in. Thank Sean and Londina for coming in and talking about their ministry tonight, talking about their retreat, and that is the Never Again Ministries. And Three Are Even Better Retreat, which, as I said earlier, you can find a link to their website through Bard's Logic Political Talk's website, which you can find on the a link to that on the homepage of Bard's Logic Political Talk. And thank you once again for everyone who's come into the chat. Thank you very much for the people who have listened to this on the archives, especially if you listen to through to the whole show. I'd like to give a special shout out to Soul Searching, and I'd like to say hello to Donna Author, who just came in to the show, but we are getting ready to close things out this evening, and I apologize that you missed it, but Donna, if you'd like to listen to the show on the archives, that'll be great, but thank you very much for coming in, and I will speak to you later. Thank you very much again, folks. Good night and take care. And please enjoy the song by Aubrey Ashburn. Good night. Well, folks, I actually see I've got a couple minutes here, so let's see if I can play something real quick for you, or at least part of it that I think you might enjoy. So let's see here. How about this one?